Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Exploring the original UFO witness of the modern era, Kenneth Arnold, and the strange Maury Allen case and a lot of the other things with Kurt Sutherly, with Gene and Chris on the Paracast. Okay, let's just check a couple other things with regard to Arnold. Did he ever see another UFO? Someone asked that question in our forums.
I don't think he ever did. I think that one sighting was pretty much it.
Probably all he wanted.
That's exactly what I was thinking. He probably didn't want to see anything else after that, and if he had, he probably wouldn't have reported it.
You know, did he have regrets over reporting that thing?
No, he didn't have any regrets about reporting it or filing the official report with the Air Force. He felt that this was his duty. This was his responsibility to his country. It had nothing to do with whether these things were some new type of aircraft developed by another country or whether they were extraterrestrial or whatever. This was something that, regardless of the origin, it was something that he needed to do because it was completely outlandish. It was completely strange. It may have been a threat to national security. Nobody knew. So he needed to report all of this. And when he investigated the whole Maury Island thing, I think the motivation there was exactly the same. I think once he started, even though he was panicked half the time, he brought in Smith because he literally felt like he was out of his depth with the investigation. He was not a professional investigator. He admitted that repeatedly. He just needed to get to the bottom of this because it could somehow have an impact on national security, on the country that he loved, and the country that he loved up until the day he died, I'm sure.
Now, everything about this case, as I'm saying, reeks of some kind of military intervention, and maybe the deaths of those two military officers was just an unfortunate accident.
Well, according to the official Army Air Force investigation, the crash of the bomber was an accident. The series of events, the chronology of the events, it all just stacked up so strangely. I mean, you had these guys going. Arnold goes there. He brings in Smith. They discover the room is being bugged or monitored in some fashion. They can't find a bugging device. Yet the local press keeps calling them. You have Chrisman and Dahl, who are obviously telling a story, maybe a tall tale, but they seem to be trying to force Arnold and Smith into believing, or at least Arnold in any case.
Well, of course, you can look at the elaborate conspiracy here that they first give this information to Palmer, maybe not even knowing he'd contact Arnold, but maybe a fortuitous circumstance, in order to discredit this crazy UFO mystery before it got out of hand.
Well, you know, you brought up an interesting point. I think Arnold was a pawn. He was a fortuitous pawn in whatever game was being played. And I'm not sure that they were trying to discredit the UFO mystery. I think maybe somebody or some agency or agencies saw the whole UFO phenomenon. And I think it's still the case today. I think they saw it as a way to kind of manipulate things to create a smokescreen for other activities. And you go back to this business about the slag. Now, supposedly this slag was radioactive, yet there doesn't seem to have been any indication from anybody that was radioactive. That's part of the rumor that flew around about this. This Major Sander takes him to this smelting plant, takes him directly to one pile of slag, which looks remarkably like what Chrisman had in his possession. But he doesn't let them look at anything else. He hustles them back into the car and gets them away from the smelting plant, in opposition to Arnold's objections. He was like, you know, let me look at some of the other stuff. No, we don't have time. Let's leave. That's kind of what went on there. It's the whole thing smacks of some sort of game that was being played, and even today it's just baffling. It's completely baffling. What was going on? Did this have something to do with the early Atomic Energy Commission? You know, nobody really seems to know.
Well, it's almost as if you look into a lot of the stuff going on in the early days of the UFO field, you find all these curious military connections.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were all over the place for a while, and this, I don't know. I mean, unfortunately, we're so far removed from that era now. I mean, we're now in 2012, and we're talking 1947, 1948 time frame, and just like with Roswell, I mean, you can look at that, you can investigate until you go berserk, and you never can quite pin anything down. I mean, the sense is that something happened, And that, in fact, it's kind of interesting because the whole Roswell scenario occurred shortly after the Kenneth Arnold sighting and right around the time of the Maury Island business. So you have all of these events in play. And you have the military first releasing a report saying that the Roswell thing was a crash flying saucer, a crash flying disc. And then they immediately recant. And you get a story that this was a high weather balloon. And it just smacks of almost like a double cover-up. Like, they threw out one thing, then they threw out something else. And by the time they were finished, people were so confused they didn't know what. And that's the sense you get in Maury Island, too.
Well, not to denigrate the possibility of UFO reality, but you have to wonder if UFOs were not occasionally used as an excuse to cover up something else that was going on. Oh, tell them it's a flying saucer. We're not going to let them know about our secret weapons studies or secret aircraft, the things we're doing with those scientists that came from Nazi Germany.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the whole UFO mystery, the whole flying saucer mystery, as it exploded in 1947, would have been viewed by, I think, people in the right places as a way to obscure the truth about other things they've been working on, as you suggest. And I think that was, I think that's been the case down through the years. I think in many instances we've had episodes where people have investigated flying saucer or UFO phenomena, and maybe it was really something else that occurred, or maybe there was something staged to distract attention from something else that might have been happening nearby. You don't know. We can only speculate. And it seems like the people that really do start digging into these things either tend to clam up after a while or they just simply disappear.
Well, Kurt, no, I do remember reading that Arnold really became a celebrity after this, and it impacted his business. And at one point, I think he said if he saw like a 10-story building flying through the air, he'd never say a word about it because it seems like, you know, on his routes that he would fly between cities, people would find out that he was going to arrive, and he would attract these huge crowds. And the notoriety must have been quite disconcerting for him. Did he ever mention any regrets about all this?
No, the only regret he posed was to say that he just simply didn't talk to people about it anymore. When I talked to him on the phone, that was, he immediately tried to brush me off when he's like, "Well, who are you?" And I identified myself as a freelance writer and said I wanted to talk to him about this because it was the anniversary of his sighting. And I'm just very fortunate he didn't hang up on me because that was his inclination. And that's when I kind of segued into the whole aviation enthusiasm thing. And we talked aircraft for a few minutes and he relaxed enough to realize I was not calling him to simply harass him or to write some story that would have, been offensive to him. I mean, he had put up with enough of that over the years from different, not just from the media, but I think from the public. It's with any, as with any celebrity. I mean, if you gain some notoriety and you go sit down in a restaurant or someplace, and I'm sure the man probably would want to take his wife out every once in a while, and people would recognize him and they'd want to talk about the flying saucer sighting. That would have been a natural inclination on the people that surrounded him, except maybe the people in his immediate environment who might have actually worked to protect him. But anybody that knew him only casually or didn't know him but recognized him from photos would have hounded the guy. So, yeah, I'm sure he would have been burned out by it. What was kind of funny was I think my interview with him, it was published in a short version first in the Lebanon Daily News where I was working part-time. And then a longer version ended up in Saga magazine or Saga's UFO report. Once that came out, then investigators started to approach Arnold again about his story and about going to conventions. And I believe if I remember correctly, it was a couple of years later that he ended up becoming the keynote speaker at one of the large UFO conferences. And Gene, you might remember more of that than I do.
Well, this was the International UFO Congress, which, of course, is the predecessor of the one that we were at just a couple of weeks back, Chris and I. So isn't that amazing? We have Kurt Southerly joining Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items, and entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. If you go to store.theparacast.com, stop by and take a shopping tour.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
What is the most abundant resource on Earth? Water. It's essential for sustaining life, but it's not always the most available. When disaster strikes, water quickly vanishes from store shelves, like it did during 9/11, Katrina, Japan, and in Joplin. 3 days without water and your body begins to shut down. Don't risk being without an abundant supply of water when the next disaster hits. Get a FlowJack hand well pump. The affordable FlowJack drops right into almost any well and is easy to install without having to remove the existing pump, giving you immediate access to plenty of cool, clean water. You could risk your family's health on a limited supply of stored water, or you could be prepared with the reliable, affordable FlowJack backup hand pump kit, delivered to your door for only $3.99 complete. See how it works at FlowJack.com, spelled FlowJack.com. Be sure to spell FlowJack.com or call 855-4-FLOWJACK. That's 855-435-6525. Proudly made in America. FlowJack hand well pumps. Peace of mind in a box.
Don't answer it.
If fear strikes your heart when the phone rings, knowing it may be another bill collector, it's time for you to call Zero Debt in 90 Days. 800-477-9256. Settlements, bankruptcy, and attorneys are not the answer and may end up costing you up to 10 times more than necessary. Listen, if you're already in debt, does it make sense to get buried in another payment plan? Zero Debt in 90 Days gets you out of debt in 90 days guaranteed, without a payment plan and without attorneys or going to court. Get the fastest relief from debt on the planet when you call 800-477-9256. If you have debt with the IRS, credit cards, student loans, or a foreclosure, we can help at Zero Debt in 90 Days, and we are the only organization to provide written guarantees on the results. Go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. That's ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Or call now for free information. 800-477-9256. That's 800-477-9256.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And if you'd like to catch up on past episodes, we have hundreds of shows for you to download direct from theparacast.com. That's theparacast.com. Or check us out at iTunes.
We have Kurt Southerly exploring Kenneth Arnold and all the strange things going on in the early UFO field in the 1940s and 1950s. Now, at one time, Jim Moseley tried to get Kenneth Arnold to speak. This was at a national UFO conference meeting for, I think, 1967. And Arnold agreed, but supposedly Arnold had moved to Australia for several years. Or at least that's supposedly what they claimed. Is that true?
Well, I'm laughing at that because, and I don't know if you remember this, but when I first started looking for Arnold, I asked around, and you're one of the people that I contacted inquiring as to Arnold's whereabouts.
Right, and I probably said Australia.
That's exactly what you said, and I'm like, what? And you know, I thought, that doesn't sound likely, but, you know, I didn't know, so I made some other inquiries, and people were telling me that he was dead. And then I simply picked up the phone book. Well, actually, I didn't pick up the phone book. I just simply picked up the telephone, called directory assistance for Idaho, and I got his phone number. And he was still living at the old home in his home state of Idaho. That's where the conversations are. And in fact, I think I mentioned to him on the phone, I said, you know, you're supposed to be dead. And he started chuckling. But I do remember that. I remember you telling that he was in Australia.
Maybe that was a cover story just to get everybody off his back.
So that was your cover story. You're saying that you were privy to...
No, I wasn't. I think also, as a matter of fact, that year they tried to get Ray Palmer to come to New York to go to the National UFO Conference. And understand, Ray was crippled. He had a severe spinal condition. He was basically a hunchback. Very short, very difficult for him to walk. I guess he could drive around in a car. But I know when I met him in the 60s, when I met Ray Palmer, he walked slowly and haltingly. You know, he wasn't all that healthy. And he died, I think, about a decade later in his middle, late 60s, which I guess wasn't unusual for that era. But that's where you go with Kenneth Arnold. So
when you talked to Palmer, did he mention anything about Kenneth Arnold?
I didn't ask him. I only talked to Palmer a few times. And the thing is here, with Ray Palmer, you don't think so much as Kenneth Arnold. You don't think so much of Maury Island or the book The Coming of the Saucers. You think about Richard Shaver, the guy who said he'd been down there to the inside the caverns to meet the Deros and Tiros, and his connection, all the stories he told. Now, very interesting about Ray Palmer. Ray Palmer, of course, I always wondered about him. He seemed pretty straight arrow with me. And then I met a former colleague of his, Otto Bender. Famous science fiction author and editor. This was back in the 60s and 70s.
I remember the name, yeah.
Right, and Otto said to me, you know, Palmer's a really nice guy, but he's just a storyteller. Don't take anything he says seriously. He just says that for the sake of selling magazines. That his core beliefs may be things that you didn't know about. As much as he said, this is what I believe, he was basically just writing to start the argument or the debate or sell magazines and books. I don't know.
Well, he didn't have to make too much up with the whole Maury Island thing.
No, he didn't. He just basically had to take the words and put them together on paper.
Yeah. You know, the letter that Chrisman sent him when he said they were harbor patrolmen, and it turned out they were no such thing. They were simply operating a small salvage craft. And obviously, maybe, who knows, maybe Chrisman sensed that Palmer was a kindred spirit insofar as spinning tall tales, and he figured, well, this is a good guy to approach with this story, and I can get something started here. But again, that leads back to what was it he was trying to start? What was it he was trying to embellish, and for what reason?
Well, Palmer might have been the right person at the wrong time. Remember, this is the time of Fate magazine. This is the time where Palmer had been pretty controversial in the sci-fi field because a lot of the traditional people in the science fiction field basically hated Palmer's guts because of this crazy Shaver story. You know, I mean, Palmer was publishing science fiction stories of the era. This was a magazine that was the original science fiction magazine founded by Hugo Gernsback in the 1920s, the first sci-fi magazine on the planet. Many of the famous science fiction stories originated there. As I mentioned, Edgar Rice Burroughs wrote one or two of the last John Carter stories for Amazing Stories.
I did not know that. That is very interesting.
It's a part of history. If you look at the final John Carter stories, which were basically short novels, you'd see that they originally were published in Amazing Stories, and the editor at the time was Ray Palmer. So he had this influence and this confluence of events that put him in the early part of the UFO and paranormal research eras. Very strange. Ray Palmer. Almost more interesting in that sense than Kenneth Arnold, who was the victim, whereas Palmer may have been the purveyor, the perpetrator in some ways. Who knows?
You know, I think he was the medium by which they were able to perpetrate, if it was a hoax, and it seems like it was a hoax on Maury Island.
Well, nowadays, I think the general opinion in UFO research is that Kenneth Arnold had some kind of genuine sighting, whatever it might have been, even if it was some kind of test aircraft, and that Ray Palmer was telling tall tales, And Kenneth Arnold was kind of sucked into a hoax. And that was it. Something really crazy was going on Maury Island. But in the end of the day, it was a bad hoax because two people died. And maybe then Edward Ruppelt was right. Although maybe he blamed Palmer, which wasn't right.
Maybe more than two people. Maybe this and Paul Lance, the local reporter, and maybe his death had something to do with all this, too. And supposedly Ted Morello, the UPI reporter, his career kind of fell apart. I guess his personal life fell apart for a long time after that. Although I understand he was able to kind of resurrect his career many years later as a United Nations reporter, of all things.
Of course, we have all the crazy legends over the years of premature deaths as a result of being involved in UFO research. You know, we talk about, for example, Morris Jessup, who wrote a book called The Case for the UFO, then The Expanding Case for the UFO, and then supposedly killed himself in Florida some years later after those books came out.
Yep.
We have Dr. James McDonald, who evidently died of natural causes, but some people say it's not so natural. And then, Chris, as you and I remember during our recording of the PowerCast of 2 weeks ago at the International UFO Congress, we were talking about people who suffered from strange cancer infections, virulent cancers, for no reason at the same time with the only connection that they were involved in UFO research.
Yeah, I've seen several articles recently about Andrew Breitbart. Is that his name?
Andrew Breitbart.
Yeah.
Sure. He was a conservative columnist, activist, mug-raking kind of guy, very controversial. But he died young, but they said he had a heart condition, so maybe not so strange.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting how people that gain a certain controversial notoriety, especially within the UFO realm, Scott Rogo, of course, is another one, how they have these just kind of weird demises.
Who was a small-time publisher that he put out a lot of trade paperbacks having to do with the black helicopters. I think he also reprinted Keel's book as well. Oh, for crying out loud, his novel that wasn't a novel.
Well, Jim Keith is another one that comes to mind. He stumbles coming off the stage of Burning Man and is dead 2 days later from a weird infection or something, I think, in the hospital.
This is something we should explore in our remaining two segments, the strange aftermath of people who get involved in UFO research, those who knew too much.
They might
not
be dead
here. Well, not to coin a phrase. With Gene and Chris, we have Kurt Southerly. You're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also, print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
Have you ever seen a U.S. postage stamp featuring Abraham Lincoln, Ben Franklin, or George Washington? If you're into stamp collecting, you know it's a fun, affordable hobby. America's leading stamp dealer is the Mystic Stamp Company, and they want you to have their free 140-page color catalog. Go to MysticStampAd.com, the website of the Mystic Stamp Company, serving stamp collectors since 1923. Mystic Stamp is well known in the industry for its experience, superior customer service, and an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. Go to MysticStampAd.com to request your free 140-page U.S. stamp color catalog, packed with collecting tips, special offers, color photos, and over 4,600 available stamps. Call 800-433-7811 or go to MysticStampAd.com. That's 800-433-7811 and ask for your free U.S. stamp catalog or MysticStampAd.com. Mystic Stamp Company, America's leading stamp dealer.
Healthy soils grow healthy plants. So before you plant your survival garden this year, is your soil healthy? Maximize your crisis garden soil with EM1 from Terraganics. EM1 Organic Soil Conditioner, Fertilizer Amendment, and Compost Accelerant provides healthier gardens and faster, efficient garden composting. EM1 from Terraganics.com quickly improves soil structure by increasing nutrient availability and converting organic matter into soil humus. This improves seed germination and root growth, improves plant quality, size, color, flavor, nutrient value of fruits and vegetables, and improves shelf life. And when rain is not in the forecast, no worries. EM1 improves moisture retention in soils, helping reduce drought stress. Just like you prepare all else, prepare your crisis garden for maximum yields with EM1 from Terraganics.com. Order now at TerraGanics.com or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Terraganics, life's getting better.
So you're a maker of something. Woodcrafts, fishing lures, glass designs, jewelry, purses, perfumes, goat's milk soap. Whatever it is, you made it here in America. Now you're eager for people to buy your products right here locally. Instead of buying competing products made on the other side of the world, right? Then you need to check out localmakers.com. Support America. Buy and sell locally at localmakers.com. Doesn't matter if you're a home-based business or a major manufacturer. Localmakers.com offers an easy way to connect with customers within your local community, as well as across the U.S., simply by entering a zip code. And there's no cost to join. So if you're a maker who needs buyers, go to localmakers.com and stock your products on one of our shelves. Localmakers.com, promoting, preserving, and supporting your neighbor's manufacturing businesses.
This is Hilly Rose, and I hope that you do listen to the Paracast because you will learn a great deal about the paranormal.
Kurt Southerly joining Gene and Chris in the Paracast, and we've gotten into this story about people involved in UFO research, and they die before their time for whatever reason, maybe because of cancer, brain tumors. Barney Hill, how old was he, what, 50s, early 60s when he died?
I believe he was like maybe mid-50s, something like that, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, he would be another one. That's his wife, Betty, I was in touch with her for a good many years. In fact, she used to feed me all kinds of information during the 70s and early 80s about UFO activities up in New Hampshire where she was still living. And she, based on the letters that I had received from her, she missed her husband up until the day she died. But that whole scenario with their sighting and the Fuller's book, The Interrupted Journey, dealing with all of it, I mean, that started something that I think she was able to handle a whole lot better than Barney was. I don't think he was ever able to really come to grips with what happened or what they thought happened to them, the alleged abduction. I don't know. She was my sense of Betty Hill from a couple of brief phone conversations and from the many letters that I received from her was that she was a very tough-minded woman and that nothing was going to push her into the afterlife any sooner than she needed to go. But, yeah, her husband, I don't think he really was able to handle it in any real fashion. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if that didn't have something to do with his early death.
Well, is it emotional then, all this, or did he suffer some kind of external infection?
People, I think for all of these people, the emotion, it's pretty well known today that with illness, your state of mind has a lot to do with your mental health has a lot to do with your physical health. If you're in poor mental health, if you have a negative attitude about a lot of things, if you're just constantly worrying over things and stressing over things, obviously it's going to put you into poor health and it can simply push you into an early death. I think it's why in a lot of cases, and we're kind of digressing here, but where you have, I'll give you a personal example. My aunt and uncle, Aunt Joanne and Uncle Ron, John Paul, I should say, the last name is Weatherholtz. He died in his mid-40s of cancer. It came on very suddenly, very unexpected. They later thought it might have had something to do with radon disease in the house. But he died quickly, and Joanne, within a year, died as well.
That's not uncommon, that the spouse doesn't always survive, and we think, of course, of June Carter Cash and Johnny Cash died within months of each other.
Yeah, she literally did not want to live without her husband, without John Paul. They were that close. I used to run around with him a lot. We'd go to antique places. We'd go to country markets, that kind of thing. And, you know, and they were, I wasn't that much younger than they were. And so we were, instead of them being aunt and uncle, we were like close friends. And when he died, it affected me strongly. And I saw how it hit my aunt, Joanne. I mean, she just, it tore her apart. And I've seen this, you know, we're all at this point in life now where we've had enough experiences like this that you kind of see it. And it does say a lot about the state of the mind and how it affects your physical health. In the case of Barney Hill, I really think that this early episode with this UFO abduction or whatever it was that really happened, this affected him in such a way that I think it pushed him to an early grave. You know, I think a man probably, he might still be alive today had this not happened. It's probably almost like getting bit by a scorpion.
Well, we don't want to get into the raw details of that. Now, let's look into opinions here. We're talking to you mostly as a journalist here, trying to put pieces together, trying to figure out about Kenneth Arnold's experiences in the UFO field, about what happened. Personally, looking at all this stuff, do you go along with the fact that maybe this Fred Lee Chrisman character was somebody in some way connected with the military, and whether with their sanction or without their sanction was doing something he felt they wanted done?
I don't think he was connected to the military. I think he was connected to the intelligence community. A big difference there. I mean, you have intelligence services within the military, but the feeling I got through the conversation with Arnold, and he didn't really get into that a whole lot, but digging into the various records related to all of this and taking a close look at the principal players, the feeling that I have is that Fred Lee Chrisman was somebody who was involved with the intelligence community, probably as a mid-level operative. He was there pushing an agenda for whatever agency he was working for, maybe the CIA. The CIA was kind of in its infancy at that point. The big question is, what was he doing? What was the whole point of this, creating this story? Or did he just like to do this kind of thing? Was he just kind of a nut? Maybe he was both. Maybe he was working for the intelligence community and he was kind of a nut, kind of an oddball. Okay, maybe he was kind of a nut. Maybe he was both part of the intelligence community and somebody that liked to throw nonsense out into the open and see who would jump at it.
He was an unofficial loose cannon then.
Yeah, he probably was, and it kind of goes back to what you were saying about Richard Doty earlier. You know, he almost seemed like he fits into that same mold. He was a bit of a loose cannon, I think.
Kurt, I have a quick question for you.
Yeah.
I seem to remember reading Ken Thomas's book about the Maury Island incident. That I think he mentions in there that Chrisman was allegedly involved in some scheme to uncover Japanese gold in the South Pacific or in the Philippines or someplace that they thought was buried in a cavern, and he was somehow associated with the search for that. Do you have any information on that?
No, that's a new one on me. I mean, I had not heard that story before. So, run this by me again. Chrisman supposedly was involved in a search for lost Japanese gold in the South.
Yeah, for hidden Japanese gold. I could be mistaken, but it's been probably 7 years, 6 years since I read the book. But I do seem to recall, yeah, that there was some tantalizing hints here and there that he was involved in some search effort to try to recover this gold after the Japanese.
Wow. Now that definitely piques my interest. I'm going to have to dig into that a little bit and see if I can find something out. And maybe on a future show, if I can come up with any, we can discuss it. But, yeah, I had not heard this before. But, again, that actually, based on what I know of this character through these various stories, that sounds like something that he would have been...
That he would be involved in.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? I mean, there's bound to be tons of sunken treasure out there, and search for Japanese gold that would not be all that far-fetched.
Yeah,
you know, I'm sure the CIA or whatever agency he might have been working for would have been really happy to get their hands on something like that.
Yeah, I would think it was probably the OSS back then. That was pre the National Security Agency and CIA and the Division of Army Air Force and the Air Force.
When did this supposedly take place? Around 49 or something?
I'm not sure. I don't remember if it was before. I think it may have been just before 46, maybe. Or it could have been just after. I'm not sure. Again, I'm a little fuzzy on the details. I'll have to drag out and dust off my copy of Ken's book. But he did a pretty interesting job trying to get more background information on him. He's quite the shadowy character. There's no question about it. Do we know what happened to him? How did he finally die? What did he do in the 60s and 70s? Do you have any indication?
Let me see here. Let me dig through my own notes, which are stacked around me. Let's see what... I do seem to have something done at the, or have something down here about his final demise.
As we speak, with Kurt Southerly and showing you what spontaneous radio is all about, Kurt came here with all his notes, probably packed in his living room or his bedroom there at his home in a secret location.
I'm sitting on the living room floor with notes all surrounding me.
Okay.
So, he died in 1975, supposedly of natural causes. And that's as much as I was able to dig up on that. So what they mean by natural causes, I mean, did he just die of old age? Did he die of cancer, heart attack?
How old was he?
He had to have been, I'd say, in his 80s by that time.
Oh, he was an old codger. We've got Kurt Southerly, who's not an old codger, at least not yet, with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
If you want to get your website online and you need reliable service, first-class service at the lowest possible price, there's only one place to go. Well, DreamHost has a special promotion with our show where they'll offer you unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click web apps such as WordPress, 24/7 support. You can save over $55. You want to know how? Go to dreamhost.com/radio, dreamhost.com/radio. For 58 years, Fate has provided true reports of the strange and unknown. Fate brings you the latest in all aspects of the paranormal, like angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, and much, much more. To receive your complimentary Fate magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Are you having trouble paying your mortgage? Maybe your mortgage loan is upside down or in foreclosure. Maybe the bank already foreclosed on you. Don't sit around being a victim of bank fraud. Fight back. We have the tools to help you fight back. Here's how. Go to InspectorAudit.com and click on the GCN Radio Special. Order a summary audit. Find the real truth about your loan.
Maybe like me, you'll find your bank loan was paid off already. Maybe, like me, you'll find your bank defrauded you at the closing. And maybe, like me, you will go after them.
Did you know 78% of home loans in the last 10 years violated consumer credit laws? We should not let the banks get away with this fraud. Go to InspectorAudit.com and click on the GCN Radio Special. Order a summary audit today and find the truth about your mortgage loan. That's InspectorAudit.com or call 855-373-4948. That's 1-855-373-4948.
That's what it sounds like when a burglar kicks in the door of a dark house that looks like no one is home. Don't let your home be the next target. Make it look like someone is home watching television with Fake TV. Fake TV is a small electronic device that makes the same light as a real television. So from outside, it looks like someone is home watching TV. Fake TV plugs in just like a lamp on a timer, but is far more convincing to burglars. Fake TV deters burglars, costs far less than an alarm, and is highly recommended by numerous police departments. Use it anytime you're away from home. To order your Fake TV for only $34.95, go to FakeTV.com. Or call 1-877-5-FAKE-TV. Each additional Fake TV is only $29.95. So get one for you and one for a loved one for safety, security, and peace of mind for both of you. Call 877-5-FAKE-TV or go to FakeTV.com. FakeTV.com, the burglar deterrent.
Iodine protection packs from hempusa.org are now in stock for immediate delivery worldwide. Our iodine protection packs include microplant powder, green life kelp, red palm oil, and our clear roll-on iodine that will feed the body the iodine it needs. All iodine protection packs are in stock. Save you money and ship for free in all 50 states. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
HempUSA.org has a revolutionary wonder food for detoxing the body and rebuilding the immune system.
Microplant powder can help unclog arteries and soften heart valves while removing heavy metals, virus, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Plus, it cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. Visit us at HempUSA.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
We have Kurt Sutherly for another segment on the Paracast with Gene and Chris, and we're talking about Fred Lee Chrisman. And as you mentioned, Chrisman must have been, what, in the 60s when Maury Island occurred?
Probably, might have been a little younger. I'd say probably in his 50s, late 40s, early 50s when that occurred.
Okay.
And you know what? Now that I think about it, Arnold never really did give any indication of his age. I got the feeling that Dahl was probably a fair amount younger than Chrisman. And he described Dahl as being kind of, he was like 6'2", lumberjack built, kind of a strapping guy. So you get the sense that he might have been like in his late 20s, early 30s, and Chrisman a good 10 or 15 years older. So that was.
Well, I'm not sure if Kurt's aware of this, but my father was in the Coast Guard in Puget Sound in 46 and 47. And I remember a couple of times when we were kids, he told us a story. I remember one time in particular around the dinner table of seeing, getting a new radar unit on their cutter and detecting objects that seemed to be going in and out of Puget Sound at hypersonic speed. And later on, after I got more involved in this whole field, I remember bouncing that question off him and asking him, hey, do you remember when you told us that story? And he totally denied it. He actually got kind of nervous and said, well, I never told that.
So he was saying that the objects were diving in and out of Puget Sound.
They were going in and out of Puget Sound and straight to Juan de Fuca, yeah.
Well, you know, that's not unheard of in the annals of UFO history either. I mean, Ivan Sanderson called them undersea, you know, flying objects. And, you have that kind of story surfacing all the time of people seeing things and disks of various objects that would simply dive beneath the surface of the ocean at some place or maybe dive into a harbor and not be seen again, or maybe they would simply track them. I guess there were a number of cases. Keel was into this. He dug in a number of stories where various navies, I believe the over in Scandinavia, the navy over there was constantly tracking strange submerged objects moving at high speed with sonar, and they would pursue this. They thought these were Russian submarines, but they never could prove it. But in many cases, these objects were going too fast to be Russian submarines. And our Navy they're not going to be quick to admit it, but there have been cases where they've tracked various submersibles as well that are moving at high speed. So, I don't know. You start pulling one thread and all kinds of other things start to unravel, and you've got this whole mess of strange mysteries.
And you have to wonder in those days, what percentage of UFO cases were really caused by some kind of government experiment?
You talking about back in the 40s?
Definitely back in the 40s and early 50s, when so many things were being tried, as they say.
Either the things were being tried or the fact that we were trying things, such as earlier atomic tests, was attracting attention from somewhere. I mean, we talk about all this, and I'm kind of guilty of this, too. I tend to be fairly pragmatic, despite my interest in all this stuff. And I look at this, and I think, there's a rational explanation for most unexplained phenomena. But when you get to the bottom of it, in some cases there is no rational explanation other than to assume or to come to the conclusion that we're dealing with something that's either extra-dimensional or extraterrestrial. And for instance, I think of the business with the green fireballs in the Southwest in 1947, and they had their months that went by. Actually, 1947, 48, I think, all the way into 49, when the military set up what they called Project Twinkle. And they were attempting to photograph these objects, but they were never having a lot of luck because they'd see these strange, brilliant green meteors in one location. They'd set up their scopes, and these objects would stop appearing in that location and start appearing somewhere else. And you get the feeling, because of the location, because of the proximity of these objects with some of the nuclear testing that was going on at the time, that these were objects that were curious about what we were doing.
Klaatu was coming here from wherever.
Exactly. Except he didn't land on the White House lawn or in Central Park or wherever it was he was supposed to have landed. He was just simply flying over and checking things out. But of course, there's also the idea that when we started to set off atomic tests, did we create a rift? Did we fracture some sort of a barrier that allowed things to come and go? You can speculate all day and all night about these things, and you're kind of left, with an empty sheet of paper in your lap.
And that may be the other question to ask here. What are we left with the life story of Kenneth Arnold, who got himself accidentally into the UFO mystery because he reported what he saw? And maybe if he shut up, we wouldn't hear about it in the same way. Maybe look at it that way. If Kenneth Arnold had never said, "I saw something strange," would the UFO mystery have gotten so much attention?
I think it would have. I think it would have taken off with somebody else. But as it happened, he was the person that first brought it to the public attention. And it was circumstance. I mean, he happened to see this. Maybe somebody else had the same sighting. Maybe the people he mentioned in his report, that there had been an airliner flying 5 or 6 miles behind him off his port wing. The objects were also in the port side, meaning the left side of the aircraft. Maybe the people in that airliner saw it as well, but they didn't report it. It could have happened the other way. It could have been him, like you said, that kept his mouth shut, and maybe the pilot of that airliner might have reported the sighting, and this whole thing would have taken on an entirely different tone.
Or nobody would have reported this thing at all.
Exactly. I mean, they might have all kept quiet. But again, then you had Smith on July 4th reporting his sighting, but I believe that he and his co-pilot, I think the guy's name was Wendell Stevens, they only reported it because Arnold had already come forward with his report.
So that he opened the door. He's the big door opener for all this stuff, that he made it acceptable to see strange things and report those strange things and maybe not be laughed at or not be laughed at so severely.
And, his report today is still officially classified as unexplained by the military. That is, they've never tried to close the door on that. They've never tried.
I didn't know that.
It is still unexplained. They've never tried to come up with some kind of cock and bull story about this guy seeing nonsense. That's why when you said earlier about the report of him supposedly having seen a mirage, or them trying to make it sound like he saw a mirage, I had never heard this before, because I know that the report is still considered unexplained.
That's something thrown into the Wikipedia entry. And, of course, lots of people can edit those things. Now, in terms of Maury Island, isn't that officially regarded as a hoax, though?
I think the official FBI report on it was that this was a hoax, and that the players, in this case Chrisman and Dahl, were perpetrating some kind of a hoax, and that Arnold and Smith and indirectly Ray Palmer were just caught up in this hoax. The writer, I can't remember the name of the field agent who wrote the report at the time when it was initially released, when it was released under the Freedom of Information Act, it was redacted, it was edited, and I had to literally fill in the blanks to put the names of the principal players, and I simply was able to count spaces to do that. If it was Fred Chrisman, I simply counted the spaces out. Yeah, that fits. And it all made sense when I was done with it. And now I guess the whole report is out there for anybody to read in its entirety.
Now let's look at what you're doing. Okay, you wrote the book, UFO Mysteries, A Reporter Seeks the Truth, back about 2001. What are you doing these days?
What am I doing these days? Talking to you on telephone so that you can broadcast this to your listeners all over the world.
Okay, you're still at it, more or less, although no new books on UFOs are in your horizon. You've got, of course, science fiction story you're working on.
Yeah, I've been working on a novel for several years now, and I'm getting better at it. I've had to refine my technique. One thing I discovered, and I'm sure you understand this, is that, you know, I was a journalist for many, many years, and journalism became second nature to me.
You know, but fiction is something that's a different world, because I've done
exactly,
that, and I've
exactly
lived in
right.
that world. Of course, our friend Chris O'Brien has a site called Our Strange Planet, ourstrangeplanet.com, and I think finally we're going to start revising that site, Chris, right?
Yep.
By the way, there are lots of ways to contact us here at the PowerCast. You can write us, news@theparacast.com, that's news@theparacast.com. You can send us a tweet, The PowerCast. What else can we be? The PowerCast on Twitter. Kurt Southerly, thanks for joining us this week on The PowerCast.
Thank you for having me, Gene. It's been fun.
The PowerCast, featuring Gene Steinberg and Christopher O'Brien, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in The PowerCast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you own an Apple iPhone and love to listen to your favorite programs on GCN, I've got good news for you. I'm proud to announce that GCN has a brand new iPhone app available for our dedicated listeners at GCNlive.com. Listen to your favorite hard-hitting GCN programs live or on demand right on your iPhone. And the best part? The GCN iPhone app can be yours absolutely free. Download the iPhone app today by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.